What's up there, good peoples? Cameron Northfleet, Century 21 All Points Realty, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to hear what I've got to say. Today is just you and I. I don't have a guest on here today, but there is something that I want to talk to you guys about. We are going to discuss the 7 mistakes to avoid on your first real estate investment deal. All right. These are mistakes that I've personally heard stories of, people that I've worked with, either they are past clients of mine, or people that I've just talked to, and having conversations about real estate and so on and so forth. Just a collection of mistakes that I've heard from even some of the bigger investors, mistakes that they made early on in their investing career. I just kind of made a list of 7 mistakes that people generally make on their first real estate investment deal, or within their first few investment deals. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But before we get into that, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, please do so. That gives you a notification whenever I post a new episode. Also, if you would leave a rating and or a review, that'd be greatly appreciated. That shows the platform that there is quality content going forth here on the Cameron Northfleet podcast, and I can spread the word to more people. So I would certainly appreciate that. If you're getting good value out of this podcast, then that's one way that you can help a brother out and repay. I would definitely appreciate that. I really don't expect this to be a long episode. I'm just gonna kind of get right into it. So number one, mistakes that most investors make on their first investment deal or first several investment deals. Number one is bad math. All right. Now, Dave Haberfeld and I kind of spoke on this in last week's episode. And that's one thing that a lot of people get wrong. He got that wrong on his first few deals, as he was mentioning. And a lot of people do. You just don't understand real estate math. You don't understand how to calculate a deal to make sure that it's going to cash flow and so on and so forth. Right. Many times what people do is they just say, OK, so my mortgage is going to be $1,000 a month and I'm going to be getting $1,500 a month in monthly rents. So that means I'll be cash flowing $500. That's not the case. That's not how it works. OK, now, with that said, I'm not going to really go into detail on how to do the math. OK, but I will give you some examples. I'll kind of lead you on the right path. That would be its own podcast episode. As a matter of fact, I probably will do a YouTube video on that soon, because it's just a lot to really go into right here on this particular podcast episode. All right, so stay tuned to my YouTube channel for that, because I'll probably be doing that soon. But a couple things you want to look out for and that you want to calculate into your offer price to make sure that you're buying the property right is you want to account for property taxes. All right, so find out how much the property's taxes are and calculate that into your expenses. Another thing you want to calculate for is insurance, okay? Water, sewer bills, property management fees. And with that said, property management fees, even if you are planning to manage the property yourself, I still recommend calculating in a 10% property management fee. And the reason for that is because you may not want to manage the property for the whole time that you own it, okay? So this way, when that time comes, you'll still be cash flowing on that property. Why? Because you bought it right. You did your numbers correctly when you purchased the property 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever it is that you decide that you don't want to manage the property anymore and you want to hire a property manager. The going rate for the most part for property managers is 10% of the gross rents. Okay, so you want to calculate that in your purchase price and your expenses when you're calculating to see if you are getting a good deal. All right, so you want to account for 10% property management fees. You also want to consider maintenance. All right, and maintenance, that really depends as far as how much maintenance to calculate in. It really depends. If you're purchasing a property that's totally renovated, you might be able to get away with only calculating 3% for maintenance. If you are going to purchase something that's kind of move-in ready but it's not renovated, you might want to go with like 5% or 6% or something like that. And when I talk about these percentages, I'm talking about percentage off of the rental income, or off of the income, I should say, the total income of the property. the gross income of the property. So when I'm talking about calculating 5% for maintenance or 3% for maintenance or, you know, 10% for property management fees, I'm talking about the percentage of the gross income for the property. All right. So we talked about real estate taxes, property insurance, water, sewer bills, property management, maintenance. You also want to consider vacancy rates. So vacancy rates is basically the amount of time that you expect the property to sit vacant over the time that you own it. All right. So this can vary as well. Some people use 3%. Some people use 5%. It's really up to you. Just kind of know the area that you're investing in. All right. An area such as New Haven has lower vacancy rates than an area like Waterbury, for instance. You know, New Haven is a very dense area geographically. You know, it's a decent size, but it's very dense. So you have a lot of people in a relatively small area, and that leads to lower vacancy rates. All right, because you have a larger pool of people that are willing to rent your unit. So 3 to 5% is a good vacancy rate to calculate into your purchase price. Another thing you want to calculate is CapEx, all right, or capital expenditures. Capital expenditures is those large ticket items that you will have to eventually replace, okay? So eventually you're gonna have to replace the roof, all right? Depending on the size of your property, or should I say the size of your roof, you know, that could be fairly expensive, anywhere from, you know, $5,000-$7,000 and up. I mean, that, you know, $20,000 or whatever, depending on the size of your roof. All right. But that's something that you want to consider as well. The fact that, you know, you might have 15 years left on the roof today, but that 15 years will come up quick, and you have to make sure that you are calculating in those expenses to ensure that you are still cash flowing after those expenses actually come up. All right. So yeah, so things such as your roof, your furnace, eventually you have to repave the driveway. All right. So just those larger ticket items that is not necessary. I mean, yes, it's maintenance, but it's just, you know, maintenance is more so, you know, something breaks. All right. So, you know, you need a new toilet. Maybe somebody broke a window, or, you know, whatever the case may be. All right. That's more so maintenance. But CapEx are those things that you should be planning for, because you know that it's going to come up, even though today it's in great shape, but you're going to own the property forever. All right. So you want to make sure that you are calculating in and you are budgeting in for these expenses. You also want to calculate in utilities. Most properties with three units and up, you will have a landlord meter, because you have like common areas and things of that nature. So the basement, the stairwells, the garage, you know, those are common areas, and those also have electricity, you know, because you have lights going on in there. All right. So you want to calculate for that, because that is your bill. Most times the tenants are not paying for the common area utilities. They can, but you would have to work that into your lease. But I'm letting you know that most landlords don't pass that expense on to the tenants. So if you do decide to have the tenants pay for it, then you might get a little pushback. But, you know, nonetheless, that is your choice. But, you know, as long as you divide it up evenly in some way, shape or form, then I would imagine that should be fine. I mean, after all, they are the ones that's using the electricity. So why not? Right. But utilities is another thing that you want to account for. And you can use whatever number that you think is appropriate for that, how much you think that the utilities are going to run you. It's kind of hard to kind of throw a number out there, because properties are so different. You know, if it's just a 3-family or 4-unit property, it's probably just electric that they're paying for. But, you know, some larger buildings, you may also have heat in the hallways. OK, so, you know, whatever your common area utilities are, you want to budget that into your calculations as well. All right. You also have snow removal and lawn maintenance. If your property is, or if the prospective property is a commercial property, you'll also want to budget in trash removal. All right. So what you want to do is call around to see what companies are picking up the trash in that area, and see how much they would charge you for that particular property. All right. And calculate that into your expenses as well. All right. So that's pretty much as far as I'm going to go with that one mistake that newer investors make when they are calculating their offers and how much they're going to offer on a property. Is a lot of times they don't consider those expenses. All right, so again, I can do a YouTube video at some point in the near future that goes into further detail of how to calculate those numbers. And, you know, really to make it easier, I use BiggerPockets calculators. That's what I use. All right, even when I'm working with clients, when I'm calculating what I think a good offer price should be for a particular property, I go to BiggerPockets calculators. That's what I'm using, whether it's for my personal investment or it's for a client that I'm working with. That's what I'm using. So I definitely recommend that that you also use the BiggerPockets calculators. They are really good, and they account for all of these things that I just mentioned. It is free for your first, I'm not sure how many, maybe 3 to 5 uses. But then after that, you're going to have to start paying for it. And it's just a monthly subscription to a bunch of the services that BiggerPockets has. I'm not sponsored by BiggerPockets, but you know, if you've been following me for a while, you know that I am a huge fan of BiggerPockets. A lot of great learning material over there. So I definitely recommend perusing that website. You'll definitely get a lot out of it. All right, so that's it. That's number one is bad math. That's one reason that that's one mistake that a lot of newer investors make. Number two is bad locations. All right, now in talking about bad locations, I'm not just talking about the safety of the neighborhood. Everybody knows that. For the most part, everybody knows that. All right, you want to be comfortable with the level of safety that a particular neighborhood provides. With that said, yes, I'm using my words wisely, or at least I'm trying to. Some people are comfortable investing in the hood. Some people are not comfortable investing in the hood, whatever you consider the hood to be, right? But some people are more comfortable than others investing in certain types of neighborhoods, all right? How comfortable are you investing in neighborhoods that have lower levels of safety? Another thing that I think is just as important as that, if not more important, to be honest with you, is proximity to your residence, right? Where do you live? Many people ask me, where is a good place to invest in Connecticut, all right? My answer is generally, well, where do you live? You know, because I feel like your first few properties should be within close proximity to your home. Why is that? Because many times you are going to be much more familiar with that area. So you know, this side of town has these characteristics. That side of town has those characteristics. And you know what you're more comfortable with when it comes to investing in those areas. Also, if something was to arise, if there was an issue to arise, a maintenance issue or what have you, do you really want to be driving an hour away, 2 hours away to deal with an issue, you know, late at night? Probably not. All right. So I believe that your first few properties should be within close proximity to your home. The main reason for that is because, yes, convenience. Like I said, you want to be able to get to the property relatively quickly if necessary. But also, you know the market. You're more familiar with the market. You'll know if there's a declining population or if the population is on the increase. You know what the schools are like in a particular area, you know, and so on and so forth. These are very, very important. With that said, you know, along with number two being a bad location, do you really want to invest in an area where the population is declining? You probably shouldn't, you know, because a declining population leads to depreciation of your property. And that's something that you certainly don't want. All right. So if you are not 100% familiar with the area, how can you go about educating yourself in that way? There's a few ways, but one way that I suggest is to call or go down to, maybe call these days, but call down to the Board of Education and check the local schools in that area and see if the enrollment rates are steady. Are they going up? Are they going down? That's a good indicator as to whether or not the population is on the increase or the decline. So that's one little tip there. Like I said, just call the Board of Education, see what they say as far as what's going on with the school population. That's a good indicator as to what's going on in the area. You'll also want to monitor the news, see what's going on. You know, are there any large businesses that are moving into the area, large businesses that are moving out of the area? What does that mean? If they are or if they aren't? Well, if they are, then appreciation is probably going to be coming shortly thereafter. If there are large businesses that are moving into the area. And when I say large businesses, I mean businesses that have high paying jobs. That is good for the real estate market because large businesses that are bringing in high paying jobs come with people that are going to be entering into the housing market. And if they have high paying jobs, then they can pay more for properties. And if there's a lot of them coming in, then that means that there'll be an increased demand for properties. So now you have more people that make more money that are looking to purchase property in these particular areas. That leads to appreciation of the properties. Another thing that I recommend is to attend the local planning and zoning meetings. Or a lot of times they're online nowadays, you know, so a lot of times they're on Zoom, they're Zoom meetings, or what's the other one? The Microsoft, whatever it's called there, Microsoft Meet, or that's Google Meet, whatever, you know what I mean. But a lot of times the meetings are online these days. So you can either attend the meetings and listen to what's going on in the planning and zoning meetings in that particular city or town. That way you know what businesses are trying to move into the area. You'll know what developments are being planned and things of that nature. And that should give you a good picture on what's going on in that local market. If you don't have time to attend these meetings, again, whether it be virtually or in person, many times there are the meeting minutes that are still online. So just go to your local, whatever city or town it is that you're looking to invest in. So let's just say it's New Haven. Just Google New Haven Planning Commission or Planning and Zoning Commission. If you scroll through a little bit, you will see the meeting minutes, all right, from their last few, actually it's a couple of years worth of meetings. You'll be able to see the minutes there. That's really good information, really good data to understand what is going on in that particular town. So again, whether you're in New Haven, Meriden, Waterbury, wherever you're looking at, just Google your city's planning commission or planning and zoning commission. You know, the different cities, towns call it different things. They should have a schedule for when their next meetings are going to be, and they should also have the minutes from the last several meetings. Once you educate yourself on what's going on in these particular cities or these particular neighborhoods or what have you, that should give you a better understanding as to what's going on, and that should decrease your chances of making an investment in a bad location. All right, number three is misjudging resale or rent values, right? Or the ARV, the after repair value. Depends on what exactly your plans are with the property. If you're going to renovate it, you know, we're going to call it the ARV. All right, if you're just purchasing it and you're going to rent it out, then you know, a lot of times people miscalculate how much they could actually rent the property for. You want to get this information correct. So how do you do that? In order to get the resale value of the property, it's best to get the comps, the local comparables, so that you can see what the property is selling for. If it was totally renovated or whatever shape it's going to be in once you sell it, you know, what other properties are comparable to your prospective property at the time that you're going to be selling it. How do you get those comps? I mean, I'll admit it is kind of harder when you're not a real estate agent or when you don't have a good relationship with a real estate agent. But it is possible. You know, you can go to Zillow or Trulia or Realtor.com and look at past sales. Just put in similar specs to the property that you're looking at. So if you have a 3-bedroom, 1.5 bath, you know, the square footage, the acreage, and things of that nature, and see what the properties are that are selling within close proximity to your subject property. See how much those properties have sold for. And that'll give you a pretty good bearing on what you can sell that property for. If you do know a real estate agent, you can have them run some comps for you. With that said, don't ask me. I'm way too busy for that. Sorry, I'm not trying to sound mean or rude. I just ain't got time. But there are a lot of newer real estate agents, or just real estate agents, maybe part-time real estate agents, that are really not so busy. And they'll be more than happy to run those numbers for you. All right, but you definitely want to have a good idea of what you can sell the property for, especially if you're trying to, one, sell the property, or two, you know, if you're trying to refinance the property after a year or 6 months or whatever the case may be. All right, so you definitely want to have a pretty good idea as to what that value would be at that time. All right, rent values. If you're not familiar with the rent values in the area, one good source would be rentometer.com. That's rent. R-E-N-T-O, like the letter O, and meter, M-E-T-E-R.com, rentometer, or rentometer, however you want to say that. So if you just go there and you can plug in the property address, and it will give you a rough estimate as to what other properties are renting for in that area. All right. Also, once again, if you have a real estate agent friend or what have you, they can also do this this research for you as well. You can also go to Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace and see what units are renting for within close proximity to your subject property. So that's number three. The third mistake that many newer investors make is misjudging resale value or rent value. All right. Number four is understanding repair costs. All right. That's another huge mistake that newer investors make, is underestimating repair costs. So I recommend getting 3 to 5 contractor estimates, especially if you're purchasing the property and your intent is to rehab it. I would certainly suggest getting 3 to 5 contractor estimates from reputable contractors. And I know it's easy to say reputable contractors, you know, it's much harder to find reputable contractors. But I actually had a podcast episode, I believe it was episode number 20 with Greg Chandler. He is a contractor that I use. He's great at what he does. So you can contact him. Just check out episode 20 for his contact information if you want that. He is local right here in Connecticut, central Connecticut area. You know, I'm pretty sure he'll go to just about anywhere within central Connecticut. But call him. I don't want to commit him to anything. All right. So that's my advice for making sure that you are in a good ballpark for repairs, is to get 3 to 5 contractors to give you estimates on the repairs. Detailed estimates on repairs. All right. Not just a big round number like, oh yeah, I mean, it's going to cost about $35,000 or anything crazy like that. You want details. All right. So that's number four. Number five, the fifth mistake that a lot of investors make is getting emotional, letting emotions drive your decisions. Here's the problem, is that investors have to realize that this is an investment. This is a business. You can't get emotional about a deal. There's always going to be another deal right around the corner. All right. So if you are ever in a place whereas you are making an offer on a property, and you're like, I really, 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 really want this property. I hope that this deal goes through. I hope they accept this offer. You're already setting yourself up for failure, because what will likely happen is the seller might come back and say, no, I want $10,000 more. I want $20,000 more. And if you're emotionally attached to the deal, you might just take the bait. Bad move. All right. So never, ever, 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 never, 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 ever, ever get emotional about a deal. All right. That's number five. Number six, choosing bad contractors. So I kind of touched on this one already with number four. Number four was underestimating repair costs. And again, in order to not underestimate your repair costs, make sure that you get 3 to 5 estimates. But number six is choosing bad contractors. So it's imperative that you understand many contractor licenses are not worth the paper that it's written on. All right. Again, my last episode with David Haberfeld, he mentioned the fact that he is a contractor. He's a licensed contractor, and even he wouldn't hire himself. All right. So that just goes to show, in the state of Connecticut, pretty much anyone can get a contractor's license. It's actually a very interesting story that he told in last week's episode. So go back and check that out if you missed that. But it's very important that you get a reputable contractor. All right. Now, they should be licensed. Don't get me wrong. They should be licensed. They should be licensed and insured. But a contractor can make or break your deal. So I certainly recommend getting referrals from people that you know and trust. Don't just, you know, go to Google and type in contractor, and the first one that comes up, that's the one that you pick. Referrals is the best way. You know, don't just take the first person that showed you their Instagram page and they showed you some great pictures on their Instagram page. That's bad move. Bad move. Don't do that. So that's number six in mistakes that investors make, newer investors make, is choosing bad contractors. Once again, listen to episode 20 with Greg Chandler. We went into further detail with that and what investors should look for in a contractor. All right. Number seven is not using your due diligence period. Now, more experienced investors might be able to use this strategy when they're trying to get their hands on a good deal, you know, and just not have an inspection contingency in their contract. But leave that for the big dogs. All right. If you're newer, you should be utilizing your due diligence period, your inspection clause in the contract. You should be utilizing that. You should be inspecting their property. Now, with that said, if you are going to be doing a total teardown of the property, maybe you don't need to hire a quote unquote home inspector, but it's good to have a contractor to come through and check the property and again and get estimates. All right. But in my opinion, any newer investor, first of all, if you're doing a total teardown, you're probably not a newer investor. Or if you are, you're probably working with someone that's more experienced, or at least hopefully. But you should certainly be using your due diligence period if you are a newer investor, just to make sure that you are getting your hands on a good solid deal. All right. So that's number seven. That's number seven of the seven mistakes to avoid on your first real estate investment deal. So I'll just breeze through them one more time. Number one is bad math. All right. Many newer investors don't do the math correctly. Number two is choosing a bad location. And again, I'm not just talking about the safety of the neighborhood. I'm also talking about proximity. I'm also talking about, is the neighborhood population increasing or decreasing? So on and so forth. So number two is choosing a bad location. Number three is misjudging the resale or rent value. Number four is underestimating repair costs. Number five is letting your emotions drive your decisions. Number six is choosing bad contractors. And number seven is not using your due diligence, period. All right. So I hope that this helps you to stay out of trouble in your newfound career of real estate investing. Feel free to utilize whomever you would like to as a real estate agent here in the state of Connecticut or wherever you are. But if you're looking for an investor-friendly realtor that works almost exclusively with investors, I happen to know a good one. He actually has a podcast as well. It's called the Cameron Norfleet Podcast. And if you want to contact him, you can go to www.cameronnorfleet.com. He really is a good guy. And sometimes he refers himself in the third party. But anyway, if you want help with any of this stuff, just reach out. I can certainly help you out. All right. But that's all I got for you guys for today. Hope it's been beneficial. As always, thank you for your time and make it a great day.